Here we go again. It's another New School Critics video. My name is Chris, and today we're going to be talking about Final Fantasy VII Remake, the game that just came out last month on PlayStation 4, a long-awaited game personally and for most of the world, and I think it lived up to the hype despite the controversy surrounding its story, and I wanted to talk about the controversy in a bit of a shorter video today. It's just a three-point video. Talking about some aspects of the ending that stand out to me that might be helpful for some people. First, a little bit of background about Final Fantasy VII and my experience with it. I was 10 years old when the original came out. I remember getting Tobal Number 1, a PlayStation 1 game that was just a fighting game from Japan. And usually most games back in the PlayStation 1 games came in a single CD case. But Tobal Number 1, when it arrived, had, I ordered it online, had the double case, which always weirded me out. And I was like, what is this? Because at that point, me being 10, I had never really experienced it. And opened it up, and in the back was the demo disc for Final Fantasy VII. I had no idea what it was. I was playing Tobal Number 1 a whole bunch, and finally one day just put the game in. And I had no idea what was happening. I never played an RPG to that point, despite playing so many video games. Like, I've been playing NES games, I've been playing Genesis, SNES, N64, but I'd never picked up an RPG. Side-scroller shooters, GoldenEye, Sonic the Hedgehog games, sports games, fighting games, all these things, but never an RPG. So when I started running around, just the idea of a map that you're going through and room to room, the battles that would happen and the change in graphics between the battles, the fact that you could summon, like in the demo you had Leviathan in the summon, and that blew my mind that you could have this immense creature come on screen and do something. And the story, even in that little section of the bombing mission, was fascinating to me. The characters were interesting. I was hooked. So when Final Fantasy VII finally came out stateside, I think it was in September of 1997, I snatched that baby up and I tried playing it all the way through the first time without a strategy guide. And I think I got to disc 3 and realized I had missed like most of the summon materia, most of the materia. Like, I didn't have enemy skill or any of the enemy skills. It was really frustrating and disappointing to realize that there was so much to the game I'd missed. Again, because I was coming from somebody that just played like Cool Borders 2 and Sonic games, like things where there wasn't much that you could miss. You didn't really have inventory. So I got the strategy guide, went back and played through Final Fantasy VII a second time, this time getting everything, getting all the summons, and just being so blown away by both the story and the gaming mechanisms. I loved it so much. And in fact, I think I beat it, I don't know, two or three times just on the PlayStation, kind of going through. Not every run was as in-depth and detailed as the first one, where I was leveling all the materia and getting all the master magic. Though maybe the third one was at a turbo controller. And what you could do is you could go to the Medgar Zalem, which was just this... it was the only enemy on the world map that would continue to respawn, because everything else was just a random battle that would load up as you were moving. But the Megar Zalem was on the map and would respawn and would attack you as long as you were standing in the swamp. So just turbo controller, rubber band over the O button, and I'd go to school for 8 hours and just be in school for 8 hours, come back and have all this materia mastered. And that was how I got Master Magic, Master Summon, and Master, I think it was Command was the other one. There were three or four. Anyway, I had all of them for every, like, my three main party, which that's a lot of time. That's a lot of effort. It was a lot of school days leaving the PlayStation on, but that's how much I love this game. And just wanting the remake for so many years. And we got that first teaser when the PlayStation 3 released, and it was the tech demo, and everybody was like, is this it? Is this it? And then nothing. And then the PlayStation 4, I remember I was driving. So in 2014, I met my now wife. We started talking via Tinder, and I remember she was saying that she liked video games, and I jokingly said, your favorite video game, is it Final Fantasy VII, is it? Thinking like, I don't know, in a stupid, snobbish way, like, no way she's played Final Fantasy VII. And she said, yeah, it is. Blew my mind. I was just like, you're not kidding? You're serious? And she's like, yeah. And we spent like an hour just talking about our love for Final Fantasy VII. And I remember I was driving to her place when the remake was first announced in 2015. And I pulled over and legit started crying, which I did not expect that I would do. But there was just something really powerful about my nostalgia for the game and my desire for even the memory of it's making me tear up right now. The memory of it and desire to replay that game and have the experiences, but in this updated system and updated way. And my wife was very emotional too. I called her while I was on the way over. I was just like, did you see? It's happening. And then 5 years goes by until we finally get the game. And I was still pretty nervous. And one of the things that always kind of threw me off was the title. It felt lazy. Final Fantasy VII Remake. I was just like, yeah, you remade the game and now you're calling it Remake. Did you not have anything more creative for us? And I guess that's kind of when, and it's not when I realized, but I played through the game, right? And I just beat it last night. And when I finally got to the end of the game, and spoilers, if you haven't beaten the game, like either don't listen to this or go and beat the game and come back, or if you don't care, all the power to you. But at the end of the game, you find out that there's actually part of this meta world that Aerith and Sephiroth both know, as kind of one of the lead protagonists and lead antagonist, what happened in the alternative timeline, or that what their destiny or fate is. That Aerith is going to die summoning Holy, that she'll stop Sephiroth, and Sephiroth knows that he's going to be stopped. And you can look at this in a variety of ways, but the characters eventually decide that they're going to defy fate. And they literally have a battle with the figures of fate in the game, breakouts, and it creates kind of a new pathway for them, which has some interesting implications to it. Just in the meta aspect, you can see how the writers are kind of represented by the characters. They want to tell this story, but tell it in a new, updated way. But they're restricted by these whispers or the arbiters of fate, which are the fans that want everybody to stick, or want the developers to stick to what they had done, for the story not to change, for there not to be any deviations. So they took something that was very like realistic and grounded in reality and turned it into this high-minded fantasy concept for the remake, which is really postmodern, really meta, I think really awesome, though it's frustrated a lot of people. But in the fact that the characters break free from fate, and now that the story can be told in an entirely new way, because we realize that this is no longer a remake, it's a sequel. That it's building on the events of the first game and launching off from there. So we need to pay attention to this game and what happens in this game in the mindset that everything that happened before is already kind of known or established, and we're now creating a new continuity. So in that way, Remake becomes way less, I guess, literal, in the sense that this is a remake of Final Fantasy VII, but also becomes way more literal in the fact that the characters are remaking Final Fantasy VII. They are taking their fate and remaking it in the way that they see fit. So instead of being something that's very static, in the sense that we are doing exactly what was done before, it becomes very active in that we are literally remaking to a new destiny, a new fate, what is going to happen to these characters. And that makes the title so much more interesting to me, because it's essentially like a tongue-in-cheek joke. People are going to go in thinking one thing and then come out realizing that there's more depth to the title than what they ever would have thought. And the fact that it's more of a sequel has all kinds of implications then, because what is Sephiroth in this game? Is he the Sephiroth, kind of like Aerith, that knows that things are going to happen, but realizes that they haven't happened yet? Or is this the Sephiroth from the first game, with the full knowledge of what happened in the first game, coming back and trying to break out and get his own opportunity for a new ending? to win again, which is one of the reasons why he's guiding the characters to the point where they are, because he realizes there's this breaking point that he can drive them to and get them to set up this new timeline and new continuity, which I just think, wow. Like, we have the protagonist and the villains working together because they both want this new opportunity for a new future, which is strange in a way, but also the implications of it are, I don't know, there's so much conversation to have around that, what the characters know, what the Whispers of Fate or Whispers and Arbiters of Fate do. I'm very into that. It becomes one of the like most talked about games you could possibly have. Definitely in this generation of games, but it's like you play through something like God of War and you think, oh, this is a lot of fun, the story's great, but the story, what more is there to it other than Kratos and his son and going on this journey and then they're gonna go kill more gods, do something else? What conversation really is there to have in the aftermath of that storyline? Or same with Horizon Zero Dawn. You can be really impressed by the story that was told and really want to discuss aspects of the sci-fi world and aspects of the setting, but is there much to try to figure out outside of that? Is there all of this, I don't know, plot stuff on the level of Lost or Game of Thrones or any of these TV shows that we get so sucked up into and want to figure out the intrigue of? And what the meanings are and any of that. I feel like this is the first video game in a long time that's taken me to that place. Maybe the other one, just to give a shout out, is Nier Automata. That game is insane with all the implication that it has and the tensions that it has and the existential philosophical aspects to it. Oh man. But with this being more of a sequel, I don't know, I'm really impressed by that and did not expect that. And one of the things that people I've seen complain about online is talking about, how does this work with the timeline or the continuity? Are people time traveling? Are they not time traveling? Is this a whole new world? The thing that this game made me think of, and I wouldn't say that it was any kind of inspiration for Final Fantasy VII Remake, but one of the stories that I've seen do something similar is Stephen King's Dark Tower series. And I don't think it's a spoiler for the Dark Tower series. I think they actually talk about it pretty early on in the books. But it's something that the world keeps going through cycles, right? And events keep repeating, but with little changes each time. So the main character, Roland, is going on this quest to the Dark Tower. And he's done it before, and he'll do it again. But the thing is that things are missing each time that make his journey fruitless and flawed. Maybe that is a spoiler, but each time his journey keeps not being successful and history relaunches and he has to go through it again. And there's vague intimations that some things are aware of this. There are things that change each time little by little as the characters go through. There's evolution as Roland specifically tries to get it right and get back to this point with everything that he needs. And that's one of the things that when you finally get through the Dark Tower, there's this thing that changes that may make it so that the next cycle that we go through, things really are different. That this was the time where the cycle breaks and we'll finally get something new and move beyond. So Final Fantasy VII having a similar aspect, because in the original, we end, the last thing we kind of see is Meteor meeting Holy. And then Holy seems to win, but we flash forward to 500 years later, and Nanaki, or Red 13, whichever name you prefer, is still alive because his species has a long age range. And we see Midgar, the main city of the game, in ruins. The implication is that something survived, but we actually don't know that people survived. We did get Advent Children, which, you know, showed us that civilization had gone on, but we do know at some point it ends. Midgar ends. Even the creators of the game at one point said that humanity doesn't survive, which is a really bleak ending. So if you look at the original Final Fantasy as one instance in this cycle of these characters having this final confrontation and it keeps resulting in humanity being wiped out, and we keep returning to it in this cycle, and the fates keep trying to guide it to protect the planet, but the characters are trying to find that balance of, this isn't just about the planet, this is also about us and humanity and our survival. Isn't there a middle ground where the planet survives and we do too? So I think that entering into this next cycle and seeing them break out of it is actually narratively really cool and something that we've seen in Dark Tower. I'm sure there's other instances of getting into these cycles and characters trying to break out of them. But with that in mind, I think it takes on whole new levels of implication and tension. And maybe Final Fantasy VII Remake and the sequels don't deliver on that. Maybe it ultimately is frustrating or disappointing. I think the game was incredible start to finish, so I have faith that they'll do something that's at least entertaining and thought-provoking if they manage to do it in this one. But I do think that this is the kind of thing that's going to inspire not only game makers, but artists of all type, narrative artists of all types, to explore similar cyclical stories, which I'm down for, because I think kind of like time travel stories or alternate history stories or robot stories, any of the kind of broader genres within sci-fi that we see, this is one that's unexplored, but ripe to be done well and ripe to be done in an interesting way. I think the other instance we get of this, and maybe on a smaller scale, are Groundhog Day-like stories, right? Where people just keep repeating the same day over and over. So Groundhog Day, you have Bill Murray just repeating that one day time and time again and finding changes over time until he finally gets it right and unlocks the flow of time and is able to move forward in his day. You also have an anime that's similar to that, ReZero, which ReZero, it still progresses quicker than Groundhog Day, but it's a similar thing where as he gets the day wrong, he keeps repeating it until he manages to do it in a right way, which usually has something to do with his own behavior and his own growth, the main character's own behavior and growth as a character. So when he's limited, he doesn't move forward. But when he manages to discover something about himself or about the world, that's when he's able to successfully move beyond a certain point, which, I don't know, you have a blossoming genre that's surrounding that idea, but I think widening that in the way that Dark Tower did or that the Final Fantasy VII Remake has now has a lot more implication than just sticking to the day, right? It's now these larger arcs that can be told. Again, I think that's fascinating. I think that's really cool. And I think this game is possibly the first step in that emerging as something more interesting and more serious, or else I will write something that will also help that along. So, you know, I'm excited about it. I find it really inspirational. I'm really happy with the game. And I think over time, I don't know if it'll have the same reputation as the original. Only the sequels will prove that true. But this is a tremendous first step. And I'm so excited for more people to be able to experience it and have that same, oh my God, what was that? I need more moment. Because there were times in the final hour of the game that I really did feel that same kind of childlike joy, awe, and wonder really come back. And I don't know, that's pretty priceless. So if you have any thoughts on Final Fantasy VII Remake, if you played it, experienced it, or have played the original and want to share your thoughts, would love to hear them. You can comment on the YouTube channel, find us on Twitter at Kanye Podcast, and leave some comments there, or send me an email, newschoolchris@gmail.com. And if you want to support the channel, the easiest way on YouTube is just to like, subscribe, comment. That tells YouTube that these are videos that people like and enjoy, and it then promotes them to others. And if you're listening in the podcast, you can support us on Anchor with a 99-cent subscription, or I don't know, just subscribe and leave a comment or review on Apple. That goes a long way as well. So appreciate your time, appreciate your thoughts, and if you have any requests for content you want to hear me discuss, please let me know. Until the next time, This has been New School Critics. Cheers.